Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Summer inevitably brings its own host of risks and sicknesses, from mosquito and tick-borne ailments to swimming, running, and biking dangers. This year, though, we're adding a new wrinkle, explosive diarrhea. Here's WWJ in Detroit.
Okay, so let's talk about the cyclosporiasis, which is a word that we're all learning how to say. So over the weekend, we saw that the numbers continue to spike. Is there any progress in figuring out the origin of where it might be coming from?
Well, we currently have close to 700 cases, and that means that all 700 of those individuals have to be interviewed and have a really in-depth questionnaire that they answer before we can really trace this back. But what I can tell you is that prior outbreaks have been linked to contaminated produce, and that does remain our top hypothesis. We did put out a press release on Saturday where we talked about those previous outbreaks and the produce that they were related to and how Michiganders can best protect themselves.
And part of it is, you know, washing your fruits and vegetables. And I think a lot of people do that, but sometimes they buy it in a bag and they think it's pre-washed. Should you still wash those things?
Well, you know, previous outbreaks have been linked to bagged lettuce, bagged salad mixes. And it's very hard once material has been contaminated with something like Cyclospora, it's hard to actually wash it off. So the safest way to consume lettuce right now or other leafy greens, the safest way to make a salad is actually to buy whole heads of lettuce to remove those outer leaves so you're just getting the inside part and then to wash that thoroughly yourself. That is a safer thing to do than to actually rewash any sort of pre-washed bagged mix.
Oh, I see. You'll have to explain, too, how long do symptoms take normally to show up after you consume something? Is it pretty immediate or does it take a while?
Well, that's the thing, and that's why this can be so tricky, is that symptoms don't show up for a week or two after you've consumed something. Generally, on average, it's about a week. It can be a little bit shorter. But what we are dealing with then are if we see a case that's reported today, that individual may have been exposed a week or 2 weeks ago, given the time it takes for symptoms to develop and the time it takes to get diagnosed, because then you actually have to go and see a healthcare provider, you have to get tested, wait for the test to come back positive. So there can be a significant lag, and that makes it more difficult to trace back and understand exactly what food people were eating 2 weeks ago.
I know it's kind of hard to anticipate, but when you see big spikes like this.
Well, we've got a huge investigation happening right now. So we have all of the individuals who've been impacted will be contacted by their local health department and will answer an in-depth questionnaire, not only about where they ate and what types of food they purchased or ordered in restaurants, but exact menu items and how food was prepared. So there's a lot of work happening. On top of that, we also have a laboratory system that does something called whole genome sequencing or genetic fingerprinting so that we are able to actually test people and see how closely their Cyclospora strains are related. And once we find a type of produce that's implicated, we can test that produce as well. So all of this investigation does take some time. But in the interim, I really want people to follow that public health guidance and to be as safe as possible when consuming produce. So that means things like buying whole heads of lettuce and chopping it up yourself and making sure it's washed yourself. If you're using berries, cilantro, basil, green onions, that you're cooking those items if you can, because cooking is much safer than eating those items raw. And if you're going out to eat in a restaurant, I would actually ask the restaurant if they are taking those same precautions, because we know that not all produce is prepared in your kitchen. Some of it is prepared in commercial kitchens. So we want to make sure that people are taking these safety tips while we're doing our investigation and looking for the exact culprit.
Does this hit people the same, adults, children, men, women, things like that? Or is there some sort of variation depending on, you know, who the person is that consumed it?
I am definitely more concerned about people who have weakened immune systems. So that could be folks with, who are on chemotherapy, folks that have had an organ transplantation, but it can also be folks who are young, infants and toddlers, as well as folks who are elderly. And anyone who's at risk for dehydration, it's been a really hot couple of weeks. And so the risk for dehydration is already there, but if you're having a lot of fluid losses, you can be at higher risk of dehydration. If you are someone who is immunocompromised, has a weakened immune system, pregnant, nursing, in one of those age categories, the safest thing right now would be to really follow those food safety tips.
So when you, I guess when we first started learning about this, there weren't a lot of cases, but it seemed like Southeast Michigan, Monroe, in that area, started to get maybe some of the first cases. Does that indicate anything in your investigation? Kind of a, when you find that one area kind of starts, I know it's spread to multiple counties, but being that there's one kind of epicenter in that sense for Michigan, does that mean anything?
Well, you know, our food distribution networks are really complex. And so we are looking at those food distribution networks. We're looking to see if there are any particular brands or distributors that have been implicated. Again, that's part of that investigation. So we will make sure that we continue to do our due diligence and that we are looking at, you know, what signals are coming up when people take these surveys. But it's really important that folks who are having symptoms, that they get tested for cyclospora, that folks are reporting things to their local health department, especially if there's a cluster of diseases within a family or within a household, people who ate the same meal. That's really important information for us to know as well.
Are there any long-term effects or something like this, or once it's flushed out of your system, you're normally good?
You know, for folks who have a normal, healthy immune system, usually this is something that is not going to have any sort of long-term consequences, and it can be treated with an antibiotic, and people tend to recover and do just fine. Now, for people who are, you know, who have weakened immune systems, for those who are immunocompromised, there can be some other consequences, and that's why for folks who do have weakened immune systems, if you develop symptoms, it's very important that you see your healthcare provider and get tested and get put on the appropriate treatment. I just want to remind your listeners that this type of investigation, we need a strong public health system to do this. We've got 700 cases. The numbers continue to go up. I am anticipating that this could be one of the largest outbreaks of cyclospora. And it takes a lot of staffing, a lot of resources to do this type of investigation. Public health has been really decimated over the past year at the federal level, and that has impacted us at the state and even the local level. So we've got to make sure that we maintain funding for public health so that not only can we do investigations like this and make sure the food you eat is safe, but so that we can also handle the next measles outbreak, the next outbreak of a vaccine-preventable disease as we see those vaccination numbers decline. So I just want to remind people that this is what public health does, and this is why it's so important to fund public health and to make sure that we're able to follow the science and the data.
Considering that, you know, there's been other states that had problems with this, are you in communication with them? Are any of them connected with other states that we know of?
We are in close communication with them. We've been talking both to our federal partners at the CDC and other federal agencies, but we're also talking directly to states. We have relationships with all of the states in this Midwest region, and we stay in very close contact with them. We can pick up the phone and call them anytime. We've got meetings with other states, in fact, today.
So, that's the foodborne parasite linked to produce that has infected nearly 700 people in Michigan alone, with cases growing daily across the country. But outside of fruit and veggies, another danger lurks in our meat. Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
A month after the first infestation was found on a cattle ranch in South Texas, the number of New World screwworm cases has risen to nearly two dozen. ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan, deep in the heart of Texas. Jim, good to have you with us today. Is this going to affect the price we pay for hamburgers?
Well, it may eventually. It depends upon how far it spreads. And in fact, the number kind of leapfrogged yesterday, 32 cases of the New World screwworm here in Texas. One case in New Mexico as well involving a dog. But yeah, so far, this whole incident has not appeared to have affected beef prices yet. Now, in some local areas, some counties that have been essentially quarantined down in South and Southeast Texas, it's going to have an impact there. But nationally, not yet. We're still paying high beef prices right now, Steve, and that's partly because of demand, right? So consumers paying more for beef, our rising demand, we kind of have ourselves to blame for these high beef prices.
This is not Texas's first rodeo with the New World screwworm. You had it, what, back in the 70s, and it took a while to bring it under control. What's the forecast for getting this outbreak under control?
Well, they're attacking it on the same front, and that is releasing sterilized New World screwworm flies into the environment. Those male flies then mate with females. The females mate just one time, and if it was with a sterile fly, then they have no offspring. That's the good news here. But they're trying something new, Steve. Gene splicing, potentially. So they wouldn't irradiate these flies with gamma rays. They would essentially change the DNA of these flies so that they can't reproduce. They would be born sterile, essentially.
Doesn't sound like the cattle industry in Texas is panicking too much about this just yet.
Well, it's got the attention of the cattle industry for sure. Panic? No, but certainly a lot of caution out there and watching their animals very carefully, looking for any signs of an infestation by the New World screwworm, Steve.
Another summer risk are major storms that shut off power, and that sometimes drives people to desperate measures. Here's what you need to know about carbon monoxide from WWJ.
Yeah, so carbon monoxide detectors should be installed in a central location outside each sleeping area of the home and on every level of the home. You want to follow the manufacturer's instructions for placement also and the mounting height. You want to test those alarms at least once a month. If you get an audible, sometime it'll make an audible signal sound. And, you know, I encourage people to check the batteries in that because sometimes they mistake carbon monoxide for low batteries. But if that battery is low, replace it. If it still makes a sound, then you want to call your local fire department. But I would just like to reinforce that generators do not belong inside your home, your garage, or any enclosed area for that matter. The exhaust should be pointed away from the house. And I would keep it at least 10 to 15 feet from your dwelling. And also, you know, like I said, just make sure that even if it's not a carbon generator, any gas-powered machine should not be running indoors because that can also give you carbon monoxide poison. Carbon monoxide is odorless, colorless, and it's created by such thing as gasoline, wood, coal, natural gas, propane, and oil that burn incompletely. And so when you're dealing with a generator, you know, people run the risk of placing them inside their homes thinking that's okay, and that is the wrong thing to do. You need to have that generator in a well-ventilated area. It should be outside. And one other important key point is to make sure that the exhaust vent is pointed away from the house, because you can have it outside, and if that exhaust vent is pointing toward one of your windows, it'll slowly creep in, and it may take a day or two, but it'll fill up that house. And now you're feeling nauseated and drowsy. And if you feel like that, obviously call 911. Maybe even turn off the generator, open your windows so that you can ventilate your home.
And you mentioned feeling drowsy, but what are some of the other symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning that people need to be aware of?
Some of the other symptoms can be red skin, cherry red skin, nauseated. And again, feeling a little drowsy, lethargic. Those will be the, and a headache. Those will be the main feelings. You know, not feeling yourself, feeling a little sick.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.